Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. We're excited to welcome back to our program today Isaiah Washington. He's an individual you all have gotten to know wearing several hats. You'll know him, of course, as an actor and author, also, of course, as an activist as well. One of the programs that's out right now, one of the movies you probably have seen, is Blackbird, that he also not only acted in but also produced. We're going to talk to him about that project as well as something that he's doing to raise awareness about Ebola. It is something that, of course, in the States we heard about for a while, but then it kind of seemed to taper off, you know, as time went on. We're going to talk to Isaiah not only about his Ebola Ball Kick Challenge, but how he shows that Ebola is something that affects us all. Isaiah, hello to you, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Cyrus. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, the pleasure is definitely always mine. You know, this is your third visit on with us, and I'm always excited to speak with you. For one thing, because you always have so much going on. I mean, even since the last time that you were on the program, Isaiah, you've, of course, as I said, you know, have been talking about not only the effects of Ebola, but also continue to talk about the topic of identity, something that is very, very passionate for you. I mean, what has it been like for you, Isaiah? As I said in my opening, you have been able to use this public platform that you have to be able to raise awareness, to get people talking. What has it been like for you to see the conversations that have been taking place?
Conversations, which one? Blackbird or Ebola? All the above.
well, you know, actually, you know, you talk about, you know, so many different topics, just about issues that you're able to raise, whether it's on social media or in interviews. What has it been like for you to see the way that at least you're getting people talking about these issues?
Well, I think the common thread for me has always been the preservation and the conservation of African peoples, and particularly African American men, young, middle age, and old. As I've maintained steadfastly over the years, I can only be an African American in this lifetime. But because I have great appreciation for this opportunity to be an African American in this lifetime, that does not mean I don't appreciate other ethnicities and other genders and other sexual orientations. It just means that my focus is going to be on immediately the people that look like me.
Right.
But that does not mean that I don't care or care less for those who do not look like me or share my same views or ideals. It's very simple. I care about any and everything that has to do with people of African descent, and knowing full well that there has been a lot of time and energy and a lot of time, hundreds of years, to make having that conversation extraordinarily difficult. Now, historically, what I'm going through, the conversations, the confusion, the backlash, is overwhelming for those who are not prepared. And I'm thoroughly prepared to have this conversation at the global level. I'm not going to back down with the idea of self-identifying as an African-American. I'm not going to back down with the idea of having resolution and legislations put together where future Africans, Americans that are African descent, peoples of African descent, can find out what peoples they are have an ancestral link to. What other choice do you have? You have armored trucks that are arresting, putting in a curfew in Baltimore today. Not unlike any other of the hundred of insurrections we've had on American soil. Each and every time we have an uprising, it is met with brute force. And that same brute force is happening because of neo-colonialization and colonization in West Africa. Now, it took a man by the name of Nelson Mandela to sacrifice his life at Robben Island for 27 years and not be deterred to have apartheid end. And the only difference between South Africans and Afrikaners today and Americans is that they don't deny that apartheid existed. They don't deny that they killed hundreds and thousands and millions of Zulus to take their land and refuse to leave that land. America refuses to admit It's all on atrocities. They treat it like it's some kind of historical fanfare of a part of Americana that we all should be going to the movies led by John Wayne and pretend that the Indians were the bad guys. And they're not even really Indians. They're Native American. They were people, like the Apache and the Sioux. They were peoples. So what is it with this United States of amnesia that has continued to put this marketing strategy around the world as if they are the great policers of the world, and all their policing and how they police and export their democracy is with a gun, is with a bomb, is with a drone. If you don't do what we tell you to do, we will run over you with a Humvee. We will beat you down with a shield at night and riot gear, and we will arrest you. We will intimidate you and beat you down for expressing peacefully or not.
Right.
Your constitutional right. And we all know it's not a conspiracy that if you are peaceful, there's been proof in many, many, many peaceful protests that undercover law enforcement people have started the chaos in order to do exactly what we end up seeing on television. Now, can I prove that? Yes, it's been documented that you've had undercover law enforcement that have been the provocateurs. This is a tactic that has been used for a very long time. Ironically, it wasn't used during the Martin Luther King Great March. It's because the FBI was going along with it. The FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, allowed it to be peaceful, knowing full well he had been tapping Martin Luther King and had a plan for Martin Luther King himself. And we all know how that ended. These are things that are documented. This is not some conspiracy theory, and this is not something that I'm angry about. This is something that is just a fact. And I can completely, you know, say that if we don't link ourselves to West Africa, that has like Liberia and Sierra Leone and Guinea and Nigeria, and even the Congo, okay, but particularly West Africa, that has given so much to this nation through chattel slavery, we yet again will be marching every 50 years, and we will continually be dying at the hand of public servants, scratching our heads, running around, trying to figure out why are they killing us. This is not anything that's new.
Right. I say, you know, there are some that will listen to what you just said, and, you know, especially with the passion that you just said it in. And quite frankly, as you know, not everybody has that passion. Not everybody has that courage to be able to say it. Even if they might be thinking it, they don't have the courage to be able to say it. Where do you think that comes from? We didn't talk about that in your previous conversations with us. I mean, where does the courage to be who you are, where does that come from?
It comes from my DNA, sir. I share the ancestry of Singbe Faye, the very man who tried to turn the Amistad around, the very man who said, give us free. Why are you taking me from my native land? Why are you trying me on American soil saying that I've committed a mutiny, a crime, when you have stolen me from my land? Now, the people that have this silence in America, it's hard-earned. Look at what white supremacy has done over the last hundreds and hundreds of years. Every time someone speaks out, like Martin Luther King, that we've watched him become assassinated. Every time Malcolm X spoke out, we watched him become assassinated. Every time Marcus Garvey spoke out, we watched him become put in exile and die in prison in Atlanta. Every time we have a leader that's saying the same thing, we've been trained to know, well, you can talk all you want, you can tweet all you want, all we have to do is blow John F. Kennedy's head off in broad daylight in three different directions, and that is what makes the person fall into self-preservation and silence and fear. History has trained us, collectively speaking, to remain silent. No one was marching in the streets when habeas corpus was taken from us and the Patriot Act was put into place under the Bush era, under Vice President Cheney's command. Not one single march at these levels happened for 8 years.
Right.
Not one. If you tell me one, please hit me on Twitter at iWashington and let me know how many thousands of people were flooding the streets freely, assembling under the regime of the Bush administration. Knowing full well that habeas corpus was taken out of the Constitution and the Patriot Act was put into place all that time so we could be spied on, and Guantanamo Bay was working at its highest level.
Mm.
And you want to call this a democracy. I'm not angry about it, sir. I'm only bringing up the facts.
Right.
So when you rule by fear, like any other dictatorship or any totalitarian nation, then people are going to be afraid to speak. Why? Because we have example after example after example after example of what will happen to you when you go against the grain.
Right, exactly. And that's why the courageous voices and the voices of courage are so important. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. Isaiah Washington is back with us today. Really excited to welcome him back. He's an individual you know for a lot of different reasons. During his first conversation with us, we spent a lot of time talking about his book, A Man from Another Land. Also, of course, the second time he was on, we were talking about some of the projects he was a part of that he's even produced as well. Blue Caprice, of course, was one of them. Blackbird is one that a lot of you are watching right now. Then, of course, there's Bound. You know, Isaiah, you referenced your social media handle, your Twitter handle, at iWashington. That is one of the places that people watch, because you not only keep us posted with what you're doing as far as professionally, but also the work you're doing in the community, what you've been doing, you know, with, like, the work that you've been doing in West Africa. I mean, talk to us about that experience of how, just by a tweet, I mean, you have been able to make news.
How about that? As I've told you time and time before, Twitter is my new African drum.
Drum, right.
You
but
know,
true,
and
though,
I've learned, I've stepped up my Twitter game. I know exactly, I stand behind my tweets, and I know exactly what my tweets are going to do. And if you watch me, I have wrapped up and gone full circle with my hashtag adapt. If you watch my conversation with Steve Edwards on Good Day LA, and you watch, you go back to what I was saying to Don Lemon, there's a through line there. There's a through line. I was never saying adapt and kowtow. I was saying adapt to whatever your circumstances are. And if you're adapting by striking back because you feel like you're being attacked and you've had enough, then be that revolutionary. Because any hint in white America, any hint for any white person in America over the years that they're being oppressed by anyone, and particularly England at the time, and taxation, they were revolutionaries for striking back. But yet, in this media and this time, when we've had enough and we've striped back out of the same pain and frustration, we have to be criminals. We have to be thugs. But yet, the 1% and the banks and Wolf of Wall Street movies get made starring Leonardo DiCaprio, directed by Martin Scorsese, touting this off as the greatest American that ever lived. Bugsy Siegel films, John Dillinger films, Jesse James films, Little Kid films, they're all treated as great American heroes, and they're all thugs, all criminals.
Yeah.
So the hypocrisy is clear. Couldn't be more clear. We have Google, we have YouTube. It's just who's going to speak on it, on the truth, and who's not. The longer you remain silent like Martin Luther King, then you are participating in your own suffering, and imminently your death.
Right, exactly. Does it, because you are so, you know, you are able to, I should say, are able to speak, you know, with as much confidence as you do, Isaiah, you know, and as freely as you do, you know, and of course...
That's
you
my
are,
constitutional right, is it?
Yeah,
is
exactly.
It
well, yeah, exactly, yeah. You know, and I was just going to say, you know, what has it been like for you to see the way that people have responded to you and have been inspired by that?
Because it's not new. Alexander Crummell, Martin Delaney, W.E.B. Du Bois, George Schuyler, Ralph Bunche, Richard Wright, Louis Armstrong, Maya Angelou, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali, and even Alice Walker, Danny Glover. These people have already done it. They've already said the exact same thing that I've been saying today. It's not new. And they all were attacked for it and not supported. When Martin Luther King started his first march in St. Augustine, Florida, African-American people, or Negroes, that they were called at the time, threw bricks at him, said he was a troublemaker. In fact, he was a troublemaker. Most African Negroes at the time, all right? The first woman that, the first book signing he did, he was stabbed in the heart by an African-American woman. So having African-Americans attack me, it's not new. You had slaves turn on Harriet Tubman. You had slaves turn on Nat Turner. You've had slaves turn on Denmark Vesey. our own people have been trained to turn on us for a very long time. That is the direct result of a colonized mind and the guilt of it, because nothing has changed, although the faces have changed and we have a few more Starbucks and 7-Elevens and CVSs. Post-traumatic slave syndrome is real. There has been no reconciliation. There has been no pure rehabilitation for the trauma that we've all endured, the stressors that we still have, the loud shouting, the drop of a hat, angry, you know, outbursts. This all is a part of post-traumatic slave syndrome, brother. We've never had, you know, that mental illness addressed, and we've all, collectively speaking, have been self-medicating because we can't afford the proper treatment and won't be given the proper treatment because we need to continue to have our minds and our bodies enslaved. When you put someone in that paddy wagon, you hope that that crime is strong enough so you can keep that bed that's empty for the corporate correctionals corporation of America. It's big business, this penitentiary business. It was big business, and it was called slavery under another name during the peonage period. What I'm saying is nothing new, but just because you're making a few dollars and you can buy your bacon, you can buy your milk, and you can buy your cereal and close your door, and you can take care of your family immediately, and that violence hasn't touched you yet, doesn't give you the peace of mind to know that eventually that cancer is going to spread, and it will come to your door, and you will no longer be able to remain silent. Because it's going on, if you look at it, it's accelerating. And now you're trying to tell me that law enforcement officers are afraid of black men with guns, but every other person that have been killed by law enforcement officers have no firearms, or been running away or walking or with a BB gun, and now you're supposed to have me believe that it's okay that these public servants are killing these people because they're afraid, and look at the black on black crime. So it's okay that public servants that are designed to protect us in these communities, it's okay that they're killing us at the accelerated rate, at the amount that black-on-black crimes are being committed, but yet you have murderers, you have serial killers at Aurora, at the Colorado Theater there. They live to go to trial. Oh, people with machetes, white men with machetes getting shot in the leg, they live to see another day. People that have murdered people, that shot congressmen people, that man is still alive in prison, treated like a hero. These people have AK-47s. They have murdered people, Cyrus, and none of them have died in a shootout. You had one gentleman that ran up in the hills of Pennsylvania, and the U.S. Marshals apprehended him alive, and they make excuses. Well, it's because they snuck up on him. They caught him off guard. Well, you going to tell me an African-American man who's running away, he wasn't caught off guard when he was shot 8 times in the back in broad daylight?
Right. It is definitely, you know, and I think that the thing is, Isaiah, as you're talking, I think it does help people to understand why these conversations and why there has to be, you know, there has to be the accountability. I think that's the thing. Accountability.
That's all I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things that you
and make people accountable for these issues.
Right. And I think that's one of the things you've done. And I think, if you don't mind, I want to use that as a segue, using that word accountability, use that as a segue to what kind of came to you last year when it came to what was happening with the Ebola virus. Because I think, you know, one of the things I noticed when I was prepping for this segment, I say, is that, you know, it was, you know, you are a person that is concerned. I mean, and I think our listeners can hear in your voice, What you're hearing is not the actor Isaiah Washington. It is the man Isaiah Washington. And I think, you know, you're a person that's very impassioned about what's going on around you, and making sure that people are aware. And that's the great thing again about you're using the platform that you have. Let's talk about the work that you have been able to do, not only with your foundation, Isaiah, but also in why you wanted to do something to let other people know what they could do when it comes to tackling the Ebola virus.
Okay, this is my ultimate plan. Mohamed Yunus created the microfinancing, microcredit system, and won a Nobel Peace Prize. My long-term goal, you read in my book, I do everything in 10-year intervals, and I'm on this by 2016. Hopefully I would achieve my goal, is to wake up the world, and particularly African-Americans, to consider the idea, if you invest positively in West African nations, where we were taken from, during chattel slavery, get to know the people, get to understand the people, reach across the Atlantic, have a mainland to point to, like every other immigrant in America. We're the only immigrants in America that do not have a mainland to point to, not including the West Indians, who are not indigenous of those West Indian countries. Once we establish a holistic and a positive, and it's not going to happen overnight, positive relationship, we start doing business, we start rebuilding their healthcare systems, usually we have enough PhDs in innovation, we have to have a reason. And I can't think of a better reason is that you're still dying in America. And the only time that you're not is when you're taking a vacation somewhere else that's not Europe. So why not work together to rebuild these beautiful nations that you already have Chinese and Europeans and Indonesians and East Indians doing business, taking the resources out of there, making trillions of dollars? Why can't we follow the same, take control or participate in those same resources that's benefiting Silicon Valley and coming all the coltan that's being dug up to create our big plasma screens and telephones and internet? Why can't we not invest in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange and receive the same dividends and returns so we can build our own hospitals in our communities, sustain them, make sure that we rehaul our own schools with those resources over the years, and we don't have to ask the U.S. government for anything because it's clear that the U.S. government, collectively speaking, is no longer interested in supporting our people. So where are you going to go? That's the crux of my business plan. You are a person of color. You can't go to Europe unless you're a musician. Okay, Nina Simone, Eartha Kitt, James Baldwin, they fled as refugees to Europe, and they were treated like kings and queens, but that's in Europe. And even Europe is named after a Phoenician, Queen Europa, a woman of color. So what are we running away from Africa from when she's waiting to help us? She's beckoning to help us. She's even allowing herself to be affected by Ebola to get our attention so we can put our attention on motherland. And we're still focusing on the fatherland. So right there, instinctively and spiritually, white supremacy got us all confused. The frequency is all wrong. And the end game of that is death.
I noticed even on the, again, going to social media, Isaiah, on the Facebook page especially for the foundation, you were talking about the Kicking Ebola Out of West Africa challenge. The thing that you actually found that you mentioned on your website about soccer, which is, I guess, kind of how this all was inspired last year, was the quote, "Soccer is more than kicking a ball from goal to goal. Soccer connects people at all four corners of the world." Is that same premise that you want to be able to use with this challenge? And when it comes to addressing an issue like Ebola in West Africa, realizing that it affects us all?
People who traveled around the world like myself know that American football is just only football in America. But the real passion and the real football is soccer, my friend. And every indigenous person of African descent and otherwise, other ethnicities from Spain to Portugal to Czechoslovakia to Yugoslavia, all love soccer. It's this myopia, this idea that America is the biggest, the brightest, and the greatest nation only. And that what we export and what we say is good and great for the world is supposed to be adhered to. Well, that only happens in fashion magazines and hip-hop music and videos. But the reality is soccer is number one in the world. And people love it just as passionately, if not more, than American NFL. And soccer, you don't have people going out of the games with major CTE issues. You don't have people having broken bones and being discarded once they can no longer play.
Right.
Not saying that you don't have major injuries, but you don't have as many injuries in playing soccer as you do the NFL, which is worth a multi-billion dollar nonprofit that still doesn't seem that it wants to take care of its players like Tony Dorsett. They're now suffering from CTE. So yet again, where is the proper public discourse that are holding these individuals like the NFL and corporations oil corporations that still haven't done everything they said they were supposed to do after the oil spill, and even did everything they were supposed to do post-Hurricane Katrina. Where is the accountability? Okay, it's nowhere. How many times do we have to butt our heads up against the wall, shrug our shoulders, and go, oh, man, that's just the way it is, when all you have to do is kick a soccer ball, make a donation, let's show the world, all four corners of the world, that the people of color are reaching around the world to join hands to better ourselves here and abroad, have fun doing it, and meanwhile watch me and my team create jobs.
Right.
If I'm making $50, $100 million from this campaign, I can't just do it with a team of 12 people. I'm going to have to do what? Hire people. And if I'm hiring people in this recession, I'm doing what? I'm paying those people.
Right.
That is why I'm rebranding West Africa in a positive. It's because there's an opportunity for our people here to become employed.
Right. So when you see those pictures, as I was able to see on Facebook, Isaiah, from, you know, from Canada, from Chicago, of people taking up the challenge. I mean, people, you know, that, you know, you, some of your colleagues, like actor Ricky Whittle, you know, encouraging people. You know, does that at least for you show that the message is getting through, that people are getting it, they're getting the importance?
It shows me that they get that they are global citizens. It shows me that they, you know, the gentlemen that have taken it, one is from Cote d'Ivoire. Ricky, his father is from Ghana. His mother is English. Bob Morley, he lives in Australia. I haven't had one African-American take the challenge yet other than the people on my team, Yolanda Butler. They don't get it, and there's a reason they don't get it. That just lets you know, man, how deep this white supremacy dead on our minds here, man. I mean, it's a cold-blooded piece, man. They did a number on us, man. They told us, took us from our land, took our name, took our land, and now they sit here talking about, well, you know what, man, that was a long time ago. Pharrell, Steve Harvey, I got my money. I don't care nothing about no slavery. I'm paid. Well, you sound no different than any other person that is not of color, that is just simply wealthy. So my goal is, that's fine, you've earned it, you've earned all that wealth, and most of it is controlled by people that are not of color. So good luck to you. But what I'm saying is, I got 160 million people in Nigeria alone. That's well over half of all the people in the United States of America. And if I could get 160 million people to kick this ball, now the paradigm has been shifted. Now you have to take notice. Now these people are getting the proper services that they need on not only two continents, but will go to Brazil, maybe three continents, and maybe get to China, maybe four continents.
Right. Exactly. Well, it's definitely something that all of us can do. I'm going to have you give the website out here in a moment, Isaiah. Last thing I want to talk to you about, and again, I really appreciate the time. For those who are coming in now, you're listening to Conversations Live. Isaiah Washington is back with us, doing what he always does, giving us not only, I think, great information, but also, I think, reminding us of what is important. And I think, too, the other thing that you're doing for me, Isaiah, I have to be honest with you, is reminding us that the world is bigger than us. And a lot of times, you said something that really struck me, and that was, a lot of times we look at where we are, and if things are not affecting us directly, that's as far as we go. But just realizing that we are all interconnected, I think that is the important thing. We have to talk about Blackbird and what it's been like for you to see the response. That's another thing that you've been talking about online. I mean, what has it been like for you to see those conversations happening around the film? I know you not only acted in it, but also produced as well. What has it been like for you to see the response to Blackbird?
Again, I think that social mores, lack of understanding of who we are as African peoples, what gay means to people of color. You have African cultures that the rites of passage. When you turn 13, you have to sleep with an elder, man to man. It's not all cultures, but there are some. And it's been that way since time immemorial. So I think, again, we can't heal ourselves if we don't know ourselves. And we can always be afraid of things that we're probably the innovators and the creators of, but it was done in a healthy manner. We didn't become distorted until chattel slavery distorted us. And because we haven't, again, have the proper rehabilitation and the proper conversations and a properly family talk, as we say in Creole and Sierra Leone, the family conversations to heal ourselves, and we're still waiting for those others to do it, they're not interested. ALS, God bless them, made over $50 million in a short amount of time because they know how to take care of their own. They have a own to look at, and they know, hey, that person looks like me. Of course I need to take care of them. Why don't we have that same sense of self? Well, we know why, but I can't keep pointing to that and understanding why we hate ourselves. I'm just trying to give fun opportunities so you can get past the hatred, kick a ball, have some fun, and know that when you're kicking a ball, you're also kicking out self-hatred.
Right.
And you're kicking in, you know, crisis-affected countries to get them the professional help, the continued help by professionals, and then you're also bringing, telling the world that you care about your people. You care about people that look like you on not only in Baltimore but in Africa as well. And we will not get that respect from the Europeans or China or the rest of the free world until we start caring about Africa as African-Americans, whether you want to be called Black American or not. This is absolutely a dead end. The rest of the world, even in Israel, I have my donors, supporters out of that are Jewish, are going, Isaiah, why don't your people get it? Why aren't they taking care of their former mainland? Why aren't they taking control of the resources with all the PhDs and the masters and the EBAs and the MBAs? Why aren't they coming back to Africa humbly and getting to know the people that look just like them, but they speak a different language and probably seven languages, and we're still struggling with English? And I look at this Jewish man that has kibbutz every year with his family where they did till and plow and learn their history and keep it strong. And I say, Mr. Siegel, I don't have an answer, but I'm going to keep trying.
Right. And that is it. I think that is the thing, Isaiah, and that is not only are you keep trying, you are, of course, keeping it in front of us, and you are reminding us all of our own responsibility. And then, of course, it's up to us. I think that's the other beautiful thing about the work that you do. I mean, you're able to speak the truth, and then you're able to allow people then to be able to decide for themselves what they do with it. But it, at least you're doing your part, and I think that's the thing for all of us, to realize where we are and how we can do our own part, and not only, of course, where we live, but also, of course, realizing, as we were talking about even with the challenge, you know, realizing how we're able to work with other people as well. Again, everyone, Isaiah Washington has been our guest today. Always a great conversation with you, Isaiah, for sure. Let our listeners know, of course, they know the Twitter handle, iWashington. Let them know, though, how they can find out more information about the foundation and the Ebola Kick Challenge.
Hey, you want to know my story? You want to know where I've been for the last 7 years? Please go to EbolaBall.org. EbolaBall.org. Spend some time on my website. Check out our initiatives. Check out, I have a full plan of how we can get this done and make a lot of people feel good, make a lot of people happy. You don't have to even go back to Africa. You know, you can text to donate at, quote, Ebola Ball 288588. This plan will work. Why will it work? Because it's not coming from me. It didn't come from me. I don't know where it came from. For those who may be atheists or those who don't believe or not spiritual, but I can tell you on September 25th, 2014, I woke up like someone threw me out of the bed in an earthquake at about 4:30, 5 a.m., I think it was. And the next thing I know, I don't even remember how I was, before I could really physically wake up, I was on the laptop, like something threw me out of the bed and put me in front of the laptop. And I just started hitting keys. And by the time I caught up with myself and woke up, got the sleep out of my eyes, I saw this quote that says, soccer is more than kicking a ball from goal to goal. Soccer connects people in all four corners of the world. And it's clear to me that kicking Ebola out of West Africa, rebranding West Africa, is one of the most important goals to be made in the 21st century for our people and people of African descent. I really believe that because that blessing was given to me. This is not something that I have been thinking about and I came up with this idea. This is something that was given to me, man, like a eureka moment.
Yeah.
So I can't take credit for it.
And now it's something that we're all able to share. Isaiah, thank you so much again for the time, and I know this is always busy. I mean, you're always busy, but we appreciate you taking out this time to be with us, and I hope you will come back. You know, you're welcome back here anytime.
Thank you, Cyrus. Appreciate the time.
Hey, you're more than welcome.